Sachem Perek Ches, Mishnah Aleph, Chapter 8, a new chapter and a new topic. The topic here we're going to focus on is the requirements for pre-registry on a Korban Pesach prior to its Shechita, which is an obligation that one should be, from the Manuyev, as we discussed before, registered on a particular animal in order to fulfill his obligation of participating in the eating of the Korban Pesach and offering it, for that matter. So the general rule is that one has to formally be registered, if you will, on or identified with a particular animal. The exact procedure for that is not totally clear to me, to be frank. Rashi in Zvachim Daf Nun Vav seems to suggest financial participation. You know, you put forth some money towards it. Clearly, if there would be a verbal declaration between the two parties, if you will, in other words, the guy who's shecht in the Korban Pesach, we'll call him the Baal HaBayis, and his guests were coming for the Seder, who verbally confirmed, yes, please make sure that we are included in your Korban Pesach, that would be sufficient as well. So it's the simple way would be a verbal confirmation that one is to be registered on a particular animal. That's called being manui. Now, when it comes to most cases, as I said, you need to explicitly at least say, at a minimum, that you're identifying with and being registered on this particular animal. There are, however, a set of exceptions. The people who don't need to verbalize this registry, and those are people who are members of the household of the one who is offering this Korban Pesach. So the assumption is, and it's a fair assumption that can be relied upon, that a person's children and his wife, as well as his avadim, his slaves and servants, in the case of if you're talking about an Eved Ivri, so those people are part of his household, and it goes without saying, literally, that they are included in the registry and they're considered Manuyev when he shechts on their behalf, because the assumption is there's indeed a meeting of the mind, and they are, even though they didn't formally appoint him as their shaliach or identify specifically that they should be on this Korban Pesach, it's understood. And that being the case, that's sufficient umdana, sufficient assumption that one does not need to verbalize being registered if he's part of the household. Now, those people who are included in that exception, who don't need to verbalize their registry, really can be categorized in two different classes. There are people who can be actually included bal karcham against their will, and those who at least need to have das and have in mind they want to be included. To be bal karcham, to be, for let's say the father of the household to include someone else on the Korban Pesach essentially against the will, that would only apply to a child who's not bar bat mitzvah, since their da'as doesn't matter. They haven't got an opinion to themselves. Therefore, to be included just is dependent upon the da'as, the intentions of the father of the household, the Baal HaBayis, and so therefore he can do it even against their will. And he can say, this is your Korban Pesach, like it or not, which would restrict them from participating in other Korban Pesachs and enable them to eat on his Korban Pesach. The other exception in that category would be the Eved Kanani, we'll call him the non-Jewish, for lack of a better term, the non-Jewish slave. Eved Kanani, I'll remind you very briefly, started out being a Gentile, totally not Jewish, non-Jewish, and then is acquired like a piece of property. The discussion about that and the morality behind it, etc., not for right now, but he's acquired as a owned piece of property, and the proper procedure then is for him to agree, he consents to becoming an Eved Kanani, which then requires, if it's a man, him getting bris milah, followed by a tevila, an immersion in a mikvah, to become formally inducted into the family as an Eved Kanani. And as such, he actually is obligated in mitzvahs like a woman. Now, when it comes to Korban Pesach, the conventional assumed halacha is that women are indeed obligated midoraisa and participate in the Korban Pesach, and that would mean that the Eved Kanani is obligated in the Korban Pesach as well. As an aside, there's actually Machlokas Tanaim. Rabbi Shimon holds that women are not obligated in Korban Pesach. They are welcome to participate in the Korban Pesach and eat from it as a reshus on a voluntary basis with no strict obligation, kind of the same way women don't have to eat in a sukkah or hear shofar or shake a lulav, etc., but they certainly can. So by Korban Pesach, that's Rabbi Shimon's shita, but Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, and it seems to be the Tana Bar Mishnah ostensibly, hold that women are obligated in Korban Pesach Midoraisa, and therefore the Eved Kanani, the non-Jewish slave, as well, is obligated in the Korban Pesach. But since he doesn't have much legal status on his own, he's really considered to be subordinate to his owner. So it's the owner's das that matters, and what he has in mind is what goes with respect to the Eved Kanani, and therefore the owner can have in mind that his Eved Kanani should eat from his Korban Pesach, and that would be effective regardless of what the Eved Kanani has in mind. More on that later on in the Mishnah. Other members of the family, meaning grown children past age of bar mitzvah, and one's wife, they, as we said, can be included in the registry even without verbalizing that they want to be included, but it does require their das. They have to have in mind they want to be included, and the Baal HaBayis, the husband, the father, cannot insist against the will that they are registered in his particular korban. They are free to go elsewhere, in theory, if they would want to. Now, when it comes to children, the assumption would be that he's having them at home, they're living at home, and they're free shekhs for them, that's fine. Wife, that would be the same case. However, when it comes to a wife, it gets a little more complicated, and that's the first case of our Mishnah here. We'll have a number of cases in our Mishnah now that I've set forth the basic rules, which you have to be verbally included, or maybe you have to give money, and then the exceptions, the members of the household who can don't need to verbalize it, they're included based on the fair assumption that they want to be part. But now we're going to have a series of what ifs. What if you have some extenuating circumstances? So the first case will be a newly married woman. The Mishnah is going to start out by saying, Ha'isha, as far as regular wives go, the generic case, Bezman she bebeis bala, assuming she's with her husband, staying at home, having Seder with him, Shachat alea bala, her husband may shech the Korban Pesach on her behalf, and that will be fine, and she would be attached to her husband. If v'shachat lea avia, if the case is that her father also shech the Korban Pesach, thinking that his daughter is going to come to him for Seder, so then the resolution is tochel mishal bala, she can and must participate in her husband's Korban Pesach, because barring any verbalizing thought to the contrary, it can be safely assumed that she had intention to participate in her husband's Korban Pesach, be part of her husband's Pesach Seder, and not her father's, and therefore her father's wishes are not relevant. He can't do it balkorcha because she's a grown woman, and there's no reason to think that she would be going to him when she's going to her husband under normal circumstances. However, the next case in the Mishnah is where she's a newlywed. Now, the custom of the time of the Mishnah was that newlywed women, in truth, I should probably say newlywed girls because they were indeed rather young typically in the time of the Mishnah. So the first regal, the first festival after they got married, the custom was for the kala, the newlywed, to go back to her parents' house and spend Yom Tov with them. Either yes or no with her husband, that's a side point. Probably typically yes with the husband. But our mission now wants to know what happens if she's going home to her old home, to her father's house, for Pesach Seder, which is the done thing, that's the minhag. But her husband is not going, and he's also making a Pesach Seder at his house, meaning her house also, her new home. And therefore, we have two korbanos, two korban Pesachs, one being shechted by her father, one by her husband, and both father and husband have in mind that she should be included on the korban Pesach. Now, the previous line of the Mishnah said she goes with her husband. But in a case where we're talking about the first Pesach since they got married, the first Yom Tov since they got married, so the custom is already she's going to be going into her father's house, which already is tipping the scales in the father's benefit. Now, if that's all we've got to go on, so now it tips it enough that we are in a situation of suffix, of doubt. We're not sure what was going on in her head. Did she have in mind to go with her father or with her husband? And if she doesn't explicitly say so, she'll be stuck. The Mishnah is about to say that she can go to whichever one she wants, but I want to clarify before I even read the words of the Mishnah, we're talking about a scenario where she verbally states which Korban Pesach she wants you registered on prior to the Shechita. In that case, since she's verbalized things, it's clear. But without verbalization, we'll be in a situation of doubt. And that's what the Mishnah now says in so many words inside. It says, Halcha regel rishon la'asos beveis aviyah. If she goes to her father's home on the first Yom Tov after she gets married. Shachat le'aviyah v'shachat le'abala. But the problem is, her father, Shechter Korban Pesach, having her in mind, and her husband also, Shechter Korban Pesach, having her in mind. So now we're not sure what she had in mind. The Mishnah says, Tochel b'makom shehi rotza. She can eat and participate in either Korban Pesach that she wants, meaning neither husband nor father can, against her will, bal korcha, determine to which Korban Pesach she belongs, but she belongs to Korban Pesach, which she has, she intends to. So she needs to be explicit which one she intends. If she didn't, so the din, therefore, tochel b'makom she rotza, she can go wherever she wants, but that assumes she chose ahead of time. If she didn't choose ahead of time, so then it's indeterminate which Korban Pesach she belongs to. There's arrows pointing two directions. It's her husband, which is the usual case, but it's the first Yom Tov, which is also the usual case. And that being the case, she'll be stuck. She won't be able to eat from either Korban Pesach. It's actually Machlokas Rishonim what happens next. According to most, she'll just have to, if she has time, she'll have to bring a new Korban Pesach. She wasn't yotzi. There are those, however, who learn that she definitely is yotzi or achiv of bringing Korban Pesach. It's just not clear which Korban it was, and therefore she won't even be allowed to bring another Korban Pesach, but she will be, and she'll be yotzi, but of course she can't eat from either because it's indeterminate which one she belongs, she's registered on, so which one she belongs to, so to speak. Now, that's that. Now, the case of the Mishnah, as the bartender speaks out, is we have a woman who is a typical woman who's not a redufa. A redufa means a woman who's constantly running back home to mommy and daddy, even after she got married. If she's that kind of woman who's constantly running back home, so now, just in general. So now, if both those criteria are met, meaning A, she's a redufa and she was always going back home, and B, she is going back for the first Yom Tov, which is the minig anyways, if you have both those elements, there won't be a suffix. In that case, it's clear to everybody who knows anything about anything that she's going home to her home for Pesach, like she does all the time for other non-Pesach events, and therefore, for sure, she had in mind to be at home, and she'll be registered on her father's Korban Pesach, even though she didn't articulate it. So if you have both criteria, redufa, woman, and first regel, then if it's inexplicit, she's for sure with the father, but anything, if you have either one or the other, meaning she's either a redufa, but it's not the first Yom Tov, or it's the first Yom Tov, but she's not a redufa, then you have a suffix, and if you have neither criteria, not a redufa, and not the first Yom Tov, then we have the first case of the Mishnah, which she goes with her husband, regardless of what her father had in mind. Okay, that's the first case of the Mishnah. Now, we have a new case of the Mishnah. A new case of the Mishnah is what about children? Now, we said children always go after their father, if we're talking about minors, that's fine. But these children we're talking about in our Mishnah are yasomim. Now, a yasom, a child is an orphan, and the way it works is that an orphan is going to have a legally appointed guardian called an apitropos, who is the designated, you know, parental guardian of the child. That legal designation can come from either the father himself before he dies, let's say, or appointed by the bezin. The courts could appoint an apitropos, the guardian on behalf of the children. In such a case, the apitropos stands into the shoes of the father, and now the apitropos can identify and make the decision on behalf of the child, which Pesach Seder he's going to, which Korban Pesach, and so on. The das of the child's irrelevant because he's a minor. The funny case, of that's all clear. So the funny case of our Mishnah, however, is what happens if the court or the father appointed two apitropos and there are two legal guardians and they have two different things in mind. Both of the guardians think that the child is coming to them for Pesach Seder and each one shechta korban Pesach having the child in mind. So then what? So yasam sheshachatu alav apitropsin. If you have a case where an orphan on whose half there was two different korban Pesach shechted, one by each apitropos, so then the din is yochel b'makom shirotze. The child can go to either of the two legal guardians. That's not a problem. Now, this is standing in strong contrast to the previous case. In the previous case, and perhaps I did a bad job of not actually emphasizing this before we went on to this new case about the orphan, even though the Mishnah says explicitly by the woman, tochel b'makom shirotze, she can go eat at either her father's or her husband's house, whichever one she wants, we do not mean in that case that she can, after the fact, choose one or the other. That is unacceptable. She has to determine which one she belongs to prior to the Shechita. And the reason why is because when it comes to a married woman, to after the fact say retroactively which Korban Pesach she was manui alah, which of the two animals she had been registered on retroactively, that would require brera, retroactive allocation. We discussed brera not so long ago in Erevin. Whatever, brera, retroactive allocation. So the rule is that to determine something retroactively using brera, if that works at all as the machlokas tanaim, the halacha, it only works for a rabbinic phenomenon. So in the case of Erevin, we said, you person could put his Erev out and say, if the Gentiles come from the east, I want my western Erev to be the one that works for me. If they come from the west, I want my eastern Erev to work for me, and they can run in either direction. So he'll decide based on the facts as they turn out on Shabbos to determine which of the two Erevim were effective retroactively. That's Brera. That works because Erev is a rabbinic phenomenon. We had Brera at length in Maseches Damai. So there you have, like, you know, what the liquid I leave at the bottom of the glass, that will be the whatever the various tithes I'm leaving required to leave from Damai. That does work again. See over there at Damai for more details, but it works again because the Damai phenomenon is a rabbinic phenomenon. But here, the Korban Pesach phenomenon is a Doraisa obligation. That's where we're going in this Mishnah. And therefore, you cannot rely on Brera for a Doraisa. And so, the woman cannot choose after the fact where she's going. She has to decide beforehand. In contrast, the current case of the Yasam, of the orphan. So, he can decide after the fact which Pesach Seder he's going to and which Korban Pesach he'll be participating in. The reason why is because it doesn't actually determine, it's not actually determined by what he has in mind at all. We don't care what he has in mind. He's a minor, and therefore his das is irrelevant from a legal perspective. All that matters is that both of the two guardians had him in mind, and when they had him in mind, each one thought tacitly, without explicitly stating it, that they're going to come to me for, I'm shechting this Korban Pesach and having the orphan in mind, and this will be his Korban Pesach, assuming, like tonight, conditioned on the fact that he comes and eats by me. So that means that if the child doesn't come and eat, then the condition isn't met, and it's a conventional conditional legal condition, which happens without using Brera, and not a Brera phenomenon. So in other words, hope that's clear, each of the apitropsin say, this will be for the orphan on condition that he eats by me. So that's not retroactively determining, just it won't be for him unless the child comes and eats by that apitropos. So that being the case, the child can go to either one, and that means only one condition will be fulfilled, and therefore the Korban Pesach will be shechted properly based on that built-in condition that the apitropos had in mind, and everything is going to be fine. So there they can choose after the fact, in contrast to the woman, the wife, who can't. Okay. The next case of the Mishnah, two cases of the Mishnah, are going to deal with the Eved Kanani. As I said in the introduction, we're talking here about a non-Jewish slave. I'm calling him non-Jewish, but he's like quasi-Jewish, if you know what I mean. He's not fully Jewish, for sure. He's obligated like a woman, we said, but don't forget that if he's Mishtachrer, if he's released and emancipated, he essentially becomes a full-blown Jew. Okay, so in any case, the Eved Shel Shnei Shutafen. What happens if you have an Eved, a non-Jewish slave, Eved Kanani, who's owned by two partners? Each one owns half of him, and these are antagonistic partners. They're not friendly to one another, and therefore each one is makpid on the other that the Eved Kanani won't go to the other one's house for Pesach Seder. Now, since we're talking about Eved Kanani, as I said in the introduction, the owner can bal korcho, against the Eved's will, assign him to a particular Korban Pesach. But here we have two people who are authorized each on half of this human being to make decisions against his will. So therefore you have in conflict. Half of this Eved will be assigned to Korban A and half will be assigned to Korban B, and therefore each one's makpid on the other, each of the partners are makpid on the other, and therefore this poor Eved can go to neither Pesach Seder, can't eat from either Korban Pesach. That's what it says here. Eved shel shnei shutafin, if you have an Eved owned by two separate partners, again, who are makud one and the other, they're not in agreement. Lo yochel mishol shnein, he's stuck and can't eat from either of their two korbanos for the reasons I just explained. The last case, the Mishnah, fascinating case. What happens if, for argument's sake, one of these two partners emancipate their slave? So now you have a person who's half free man and half owned as a slave. So he is really stuck in a bad place, because half of him can determine his fate, and half of him is subject to the fate of the determined by his owner. Now, The din of the Mishnah is going to be, I'll read it inside, Misha chetzio eved vechetzio ben choron, if he's half and half like that, lo yochel mishel rabo, he may not participate in his owner's, meaning who owns half of him, his korban pesach and his pesach seder. The implication, of course, sounds to be that he could eat from himself, his own korban pesach. Now you ask a question, wait a second, if the master can determine half of his fate, why isn't he like locked out, half of him being locked out from his korban pesach, like the previous case? In other words, instead of, the first case was two people own this servant, Mr. A and Mr. B. Now it's two people own this servant, it's Mr. A and himself in place of Mr. B. So it should be the same conflict and he should be stuck, but no, he's not stuck. And the reason why is because something extraneous. Back in Maseches Gittin, or I guess in the future Maseches Gittin, we will learn, Be'ez Hashem, that a person who's a half freed slave is in a terrible predicament in terms of his marriage prospects and siring children. Why? Because there's no one he can marry. He can't marry a regular Jewish girl because an Eved, which he's half Eved, an Eved can't marry a regular Jewish girl. But he can't marry a fellow slave girl because half of him is a free man, and a free Jewish man can't marry a slave girl, an Eshifcha Kananis. So there's no one he can marry, and therefore he can't have children. And that is unacceptable. There's a basic principle, which is that the world is created to be settled with children, so to speak, and we don't. The rabbis didn't accept a scenario where a person couldn't get married at all. So that being the case, they essentially penalize. They force the half owner to relinquish and emancipate their servant. How do they do that? They basically tell him he has to do it. It's something along the lines, if you will, of when the Beis Din forces someone to give a get under certain circumstances. So until the husband gives the get, the wife is married, like it or not, no matter what the Beis Din says, he has to physically give the get. And so too, even though the Beis Din says that the owner has to release an emancipated slave, the slave is not emancipated. However, the Beis Din can have its way with the owner or the husband to essentially force him to give the get, or the get shechru, or the emancipation document. So, famous Rambam, when it comes to the husband who has to give a get to his wife, essentially they kind of hang him on a hook and say, we're not letting you down until you give it. And when he says, rots ani, okay, I'm agreeing to give it, that's acceptable. We don't consider that like a forced get, which is invalid, because the Rambam says, listen, deep down he wanted to do it. Something kind of analogous when it comes to the slave owner. So since the rabbis say we want him to go free and so he can have a family and so on, so the rabbis essentially are penalizing, if you will, the slave owner and saying, listen, we're forcing you to give it by saying you can get no benefit from this guy until you let him go. He can't count you for Pesach Seder. That sort of forces his hand, and therefore, as far as this Mishnah goes, it's as if he's already freed him. So it's like as a penalty. So it's almost like Hefker, Bezen Hefker. They've disempowered the owner. It's as if he were just given away, and then because of the marriage issue, and therefore this half-owned slave can eat his own Pesach Seder with his own Korban Pesach, and that will be legitimate, and that's exactly what the din over here says.